You're listening to a sermon by Ruth Enns, recorded on Sunday, July 20th, 2008, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
My mother was an expert maker of pies. Her crusts, flour, salt, fat, and enough water to hold it together, were flaky golden perfection, and the fillings as flavorful as only fruit you grow in your own yard or pick yourself in the wild could produce. No small part of her success as a pie maker came from the fact that she was able to cut them in 7 equal pieces, consistently and without error. When it came to dessert, everyone in our family was treated equally. Big or small, male or female, we all got exactly the same portion. Here in Canada, we have a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, guaranteeing fair treatment for all citizens on many fronts. We are all aware of women's rights, children's rights, minority rights, gay rights, Aboriginal rights, and the rights of the disabled. Our freedoms of conscience, belief, expression, peaceful assembly, and association are protected by the Charter, according to my son's Socials 11 textbook. We are all proclaimed to be equal before and under the law. The courts are full of cases deciding how this is to be interpreted. As a woman of the late 20th century, I have been urged to resist demeaning stereotypes and claim my place in society for the good of us all. We women must be on the lookout for situations that put us in a position of submission and be ever ready to assert ourselves when discrimination is perceived. This is the year there was a female running to be a candidate for the presidency of the United States. Every day, modern advertising bombards us with messages that if we own this, we can be as beautiful as a movie star, as bold as a superhero, as powerful as Jupiter, as clean as Mr. Clean. Everything is possible. All we need to do is reach out and claim it. Self-confidence is preached as a virtue. Self-promotion is rewarded. Our universities are centers of excellence. Competition and self-reliance are encouraged. Classical musicians and dancers are the only people left in our society who are trained to bow. The collective title given to the group of parables I was assigned for today is Parables of Humility. In the context of our me-first world, the idea that humility could be a desirable attribute is something of a challenge. Humility is a word that does not come up in day-to-day conversation. Humiliation we use, something we try to avoid. And yes, humility, according to my dictionary, is the same as humbleness, coming from the same Latin root humus, meaning ground, the stuff you plant your flowers in. The idea of having or showing a low estimate of one's own importance is not a trendy concept these days. My Aunt Peg joked that Mennonite humility was a major handicap in the academic careers of both her and her husband. I checked it out with John Friesen. His reaction was to say that at least at the service level, humility and depression share a number of less than desirable characteristics. Learning humility is not a popular goal in our time. That modern fount of all knowledge, Wikipedia, notes in its article on humility that it is a religious concept found as a virtue in all the major religions of the world. I quote, "It is generally considered more pleasant to be humble, as being boastful or obnoxious may have the natural consequence of annoying others. This may be why humility is considered a virtuous state of being. The entry begins with a prominent warning. This article may require cleanup to meet Wikipedia's quality standards. Please improve this article if you can. I did a very unscientific survey on the Vancouver Public Library catalog. Using the keyword in title search, I entered Henry Neufeld's word faith. There were 1,693 matches. Hope was up there too, with 1,621. Love, of course, had nearly 16,000. Virtue had 212. Charity, 153. There were a measly 35 hits for humility in the VPL catalog, in the same league as chastity with 22. The humility titles were mostly from the social sciences realm, discussing humility in Jewish, Muslim, Buddhist, Protestant, Catholic, and New Age contexts. But there were also a couple of fiction titles, as well as a few business books, Humility is the Road to Success in Business. John Miller, in his book Step by Step Through the Parables, discusses a group of five parables under the title Parables of Humility. He suggests that these were directed in particular at certain Pharisees, learned and respectable members of the community, who dismayed Jesus with their self-righteous attitudes. While the grace of God is seen in action in these stories, they also demonstrate judgment. They present an ethical challenge for the listener. There are several in which Jesus used the relationship of master and slave, or master and servant, as a metaphor for the relationship between God and his people. The characteristic sin of these Pharisees was pride, and so rather than using the kinder metaphor of father and children, his favorite description of the relationship between God and his people, Jesus told them stories involving figures of authority. The Bible says Jesus addressed the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector to a group of people who thought they were very good and looked down on everyone else. How shocked and offended they must have been to hear this little story. Tax collectors were enemy collaborators, robbers and thieves, shunned by all who wanted to be respectable, while Pharisees were educated leaders in religious observance. This particular Pharisee demonstrated especially superior religiosity, fasting and tithing well beyond usual requirements. The issue for Jesus was the attitude of the person in prayer. The Pharisee's virtue was marred by his conviction that he was better than other people. He claimed special status with God because he obeyed the rules. The tax collector demonstrated a right attitude. He knew he had sinned and he needed mercy. Jesus told the parable of the two debtors and the banker at the dinner table in the house of Simon the Pharisee. Again, people were offended. They were all sitting down to have a lovely dinner when they were interrupted by a distraught woman known to be a sinner, who barged in and proceeded to wash and anoint the feet of Jesus. To be touched by such a person, to create such a scene. But Jesus defended her by trying to explain her actions in terms the Pharisees could appreciate, using money and bankers. She had been forgiven much and felt an overwhelming gratitude, he implied. You who believe you have only a little to forgive, of course, could not feel the same sense of release. In Matthew 26, Jesus defended the woman who anointed his head with expensive oil by saying, "She did a very beautiful thing for me." Being a musician, I find it reassuring to see Jesus defending this kind of symbolic, nonverbal action as having value because it is beautiful. Jesus valued more than anything else faith that moves a person out of a rut into something new and better. He respected Simon, but was pained by his self-righteous attitudes towards someone weaker than himself. Simon lacked compassion. He didn't see that he needed repentance and forgiveness. In Luke 17, Jesus was giving advice to his followers. "People will sin," he said, "but try to avoid being the cause of anyone's sin. If someone sins and is sorry about it, your job is to forgive." When the apostles pleaded for more faith, Jesus urged them to get on with doing their work, without thought of special thanks, just as a servant expects to do what his master asks. "Do your work, carry on with your assignment. Don't expect special favors or recognition." Pride is a weakness that drives the plot of many a Western world artwork. We've just been to see Twelfth Night at Bard on the Beach. Like Sir John in Merry Wives of Windsor, Malvolio is gleefully made ridiculous. He has to wear yellow stockings, cross-gartered, because the other characters perceive he is puffed up with pride. In Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, Mr. Darcy must get beyond being rich, clever, and handsome to learn how to use these things to help others. Examples like this are endless. One evening, when some of you were attending Stellet Licht, Doug and I went to see Sex in the City, a movie associated with the rise in the stock prices of designer shoes and clothing, like nothing since Lady Di. It interested me that the resolution of the major plot complications rested on the application of what could be labeled Christian ethics. When Miranda gets mad at her husband and leaves him for a while, she must learn forgiveness to reunite her family. When one friend wrongs another with words said in anger, only forgiveness can bring about reconciliation. They talk about it in the back of a taxi, and the turbaned driver is seen to nod his head as the word comes up. And when Carrie gets distracted by planning a wedding that lives up to the designer wedding gown she is given, her beau feels alienated, gets cold feet, and the whole thing gets canceled. Only when she realizes the error of her ways can she reunite with Big. She ends up marrying him in a vintage, non-label little suit, perhaps picked up at her local Mennonite thrift shop. Surely a sign of humility for a person who wears Manuel Blahnik shoes to go for a walk in the rain. Perhaps the case with humility in our time is like the one Henry Neufeld was telling us about. Faith, as a word, turns up only seldom in the Old Testament, but this doesn't mean you can't see it there. In my household, it was suggested that humility is trying to see things from the other person's perspective. Michael's favorite example was his Grandpa John sitting with him on the floor of his room when he was a shaver of 4 or 5, patiently and with great sympathy watching him play with his Lego, entering into his world. "Andrea, come in here." For the overwhelming majority of women raising children, motherhood is a lesson in humility. It begins in the days of pregnancy when the growing child transforms your body. In its babyhood, the child dictates your hours of waking and sleeping, your coming and going. Like the good servant of Luke 17, every mother gets the command, "Prepare me something to eat," and obeys without thought of getting any special thanks. Parents make all manner of sacrifices to provide opportunity for their children. And most would say, in the words of the parable, "We have only done the work we should do." In our congregation, we have many who have been involved in caring for parents spouses or siblings who have lost abilities they once had. Here, too, we see people who act selflessly, without thought of thanks, doing the work they feel they should do. Humility might be a useful concept in making choices that impact our environment. Using less is better. Several American commentators on the parables like to say that Jesus treated all people as equals. But of course, people are not equal. Doug likes to say, "Did I ever tell you life was fair?" Perhaps it would be better to say Jesus treated many different people as having something important to contribute. Although the Pharisee may get extra respect in the community for his strict religious observances, he does not get special accommodation in the kingdom of heaven. The praying tax collector and the woman who washed the feet of Jesus are held up as having insight that the Pharisees lacked. They came to see and understand their own shortcomings, their own need of salvation. They did not express themselves with fine rhetoric. They had not been trained to understand church law. Their actions were powerful symbols of the transformation they experienced. Humility is not the easy answer in every situation. It could lead to an excuse to do nothing, a reason to not try. What difference could I make, anyway? Lifting a building from its foundation, stripping the lining from the heart, or chasing the moneylenders out of the temple are not actions motivated by humility. I don't think Jesus necessarily asks his followers to feel more lowly than everyone else, but rather to realize they have their limitations and to value and attempt to understand the people they encounter. In our busy and crowded world, it seems this is harder to do than ever.